You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Our words of wisdom are from Acts chapter 2, verses 1 through 11, the Message version.
When the feast of Pentecost came, they were all together in one place. Without warning, there was a sound like a strong wind, gale force. No one could tell where it came from. It filled the whole building.
Then, like a wildfire, the Holy Spirit spread throughout their ranks, and they started speaking in a number of different languages as the Spirit prompted them.
There were many Jews staying in Jerusalem just then, devout pilgrims from all over the world. When they heard the sound, they came on a run.
Then when they heard one after another their own mother tongues being spoken, they were thunderstruck.
They couldn't for the life of them figure out what was going on and kept saying, "Aren't these all Galileans? How come we're hearing them talk in our various mother tongues?"
Parthians, Medes, Elamites, visitors from Mesopotamia, Judea, and Cappadocia, Pontus and Asia, Phrygia and Pamphylia, Egypt and the parts of Libya belonging to Cyrene, immigrants from Rome, both Jews and proselytes, even Cretans and Arabs, they're speaking our languages, describing God's mighty works.
Their heads were spinning. They couldn't make head or tail of any of it. They talked back and forth, confused. What's going on here? Others joked, "They're drunk on cheap wine."
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
And it's always a privilege to do music with them. And I really thought this would work. It was interesting because we were out of the country for almost 3.5 weeks and got home on Monday. We were in Switzerland and the Netherlands and Paris. And I got home and I said to Betts, I said, "You know, isn't it wonderful? Neither one of us got sick." And I was so looking forward to everything, and I told David, "Sure, I know, I can put this together." And then, I don't know, nature or whatever had another plan. I've been in bed most all week. And so here we are, no more complaints. But today is Pentecost, and it's the day when Christians traditionally commemorate the coming of the Spirit on the followers of Jesus. We wear red because it says that they spoke and spoke in languages that everybody heard, and it was like tongues of fire. So they were filled with courage. They were out there on the streets. They were giving witness to what Jesus' life and message had meant to them. And it says that they were all together in one place and that their witness was powerful. I remember being told as a child that Pentecost was sort of the birthday of the church when Christianity was sort of begun. But as I prepared for this morning, I found myself questioning, did the coming of the Spirit really just begin at Pentecost? Throughout history, there have been Pentecost moments. And so I thought this morning I might just, you know, move the camera back away from that one day 2,000 years ago and just kind of look at the wide sweep of how the Spirit of God has been involved in the ongoing development of the universe and our planet. And perhaps the flames of red we display today may not just be tongues of fire, but the fire of fusion as the call has come over the eons bringing people together in various ways, uniting them, converging for various purposes. And we know fusion oftentimes creates fire. And you know, the journey begins with creation. The very first verses in the Bible says that there was a mighty wind, or it can be translated a spirit, ruha, that hovered over the chaos of creation and called those disparate elements out of their chaos into an ordered cosmos. Clouds of hydrogen and helium were attracted to each other. And remember that. And out of that attraction, stars formed and light appeared. And then there are more atoms of oxygen and carbon and phosphorus led to the formation of galaxies and rocky planets. And it was on these rocky planets that oxygen combined with other elements had become oceans and granite mountains and eventually, yes, galloping horses. We're stunned by the cosmic creativity that eventually drew living beings out of molten rocks. But there is something hidden in the depths, even of a rock, that contains the necessary ingredients of life. What ultimately happened is that beings called Homo sapiens, this is a long process, I know, evolved with brains and minds capable of examining, understanding, and reflecting on what was happening in the universe. God and creation, through the creative process of evolution, created beings that had a level of consciousness that gave the universe the capacity to reflect on itself. Catholic biologist and priest and theologian Teilhard de Chardin named this reality the noosphere. Well, that's a heady term. Based on the Greek word for mind. The ongoing developing mind of the earth, the thinking sphere, as it were, of the earth itself. Now, this is only the beginning, this ongoing convergence story doesn't stop and end here. Humanity was birthed in Africa millions of years ago. It is thought that we evolved out of a similar ancestor as the chimpanzee. Yep. We share 95 to 99% of our DNA with the chimps. And yet there's something strategically different between us. And it has to do, I think, with the size of our brains. There are no doubt scientists here that know much more about this than I. And the human capacity for complex reasoning and abstract thought and language. The chimps stayed near their African roots, where they still are. But humans had a desire to leave and explore. Some went west, some went east. And what is interesting is that both of these groups over time made similar discoveries and developed similar capacities without ever being in contact with each other until many millennia later. Just think about what it meant to a community of these humans to discover language. We take this for granted. And it probably took quite a bit of time. But along the way, they began to experiment with sounds and thoughts and feelings, and somehow, you know, it came together that they could put sounds together and communicate. They could share maybe what happened that day out on the hunt, either their joy or their fears, through these sounds. And think of what this meant to the unification of their tribe. Was this a Pentecost moment? Think of the advance of harnessing fire. Scientists speculate that the use of fire to cook food accelerated the expansion of the human brain. It enabled us to feed on a diverse set of plants and animals that our digestion capability would not have allowed without the use of fire. We are a species of fire. When you just look at how much of our life is related to something that connects with fire. Trade developed, you know, people thinking that they had something and somebody else had something, and that somehow it was of equal value, or maybe they thought what they had was not as, it was of less value than what they were going to get. But anyway, the whole idea of trading. We just returned from Amsterdam, and that city came into world prominence through trading, as their seafarers went to the East Indies and brought back spices, nutmeg and pepper and cinnamon and all kinds of things, and enterprising business people developed huge, successful trade networks, convergence and unity at work. The world was being discovered. And there came a time in this flow of history when some began to ask questions. Why am I here? What is the purpose of my life? And they began to probe the meaning of truth and of issues like justice, wrestling with aspects of social order, ethics, and politics, sometimes referred to as the Axial Age. It happened around the same time in India and China and in the Middle East and among the Greeks. And then there developed some sense of something beyond, of an extraordinary realm. Some called it the Tao, some called it heaven, some spoke of God, some spoke of nirvana. And new religions took shape: Zoroastrianism, Hinduism, Buddhism, Christianity, and Islam. And just think, we now live in a time of a significant increase in interfaith dialogue. It's happened in our lifetime. People of different faith traditions now live next to us on our streets, in our neighborhoods. They work with us. They go to school with us. Is this a Pentecost sign? People communicating in their own language, as it were, or across their own religious concepts? Can we be all together now, even with our religious differences? Can we explore unanswered questions together? And we certainly have them as the earth deals with significant developments and challenges, as we work together to care for the earth or seek the well-being of every person. I think of the movement out of feudalism and church-controlled states and towards democracy. Think of the Magna Carta, rule of law over the executive power of kings. Magna Carta. The fight for democracy in Holland, in the Netherlands, where we were, in the 16th century, they fought an 80 years war with Spain just to be free of control. And they declared in 1581 that rulers are to serve the people and not the other way around. We think of the movements against slavery. We think of the Civil War. We think of the desire to lift the status of women and give equal voting rights to all. And you know, I mean, there's many, many things that we could put into this outline of ways in which the world has moved to come further together and to become more of a unity. But I just want to talk a little bit about the strategic time of conversions that is my lifetime, your lifetime. A time of amazing advancements. I was born in 1942. I'm going to get my handkerchief. World War II was raging. I remember seeing, you know, Jeeps going down railroad tracks. I mean, on railroad cars. But out of that comes the United Nations, with the articulated mission of maintaining international peace and security, and to develop friendly relations among states to promote international cooperation and to serve as a center for harmonizing the actions of states in achieving these goals. And a few years later, the World Health Organization aimed at international cooperation dealing with health challenges around the world. Right now, the WHO is fiercely at work in Africa dealing with the Ebola crisis. And we can debate whether or not these organizations have accomplished all these goals, but is not their very existence a sign of the lure, something within us that calls us to some form of unity and working together? Call of God's Spirit towards love and peace and justice and human well-being. My parents never left the United States. A one-day trip maybe into Vancouver or Tijuana, I mean, but in terms of, you know, going out of the country, no, that wasn't in their view of things. I have a distinct child memory of going to O'Hare Airport one day. And at the time, O'Hare was a military airfield. We used to drive by it all the time. But on that day, I was joining others standing on makeshift bleachers to watch the first takeoffs and landings of Boeing 707 aircraft. A whole new world of interconnection was about to happen. Pentecost. We hardly think of air travel today. It's become a normal part of our life in ways that trains may have been a century ago. Our two children, one 2.5 years old and one 4 months old, went on their first trip to Europe in 1990. And they're now world travelers. They met us in Amsterdam for a week. And on that same recent trip, Betsy and I were invited to have lunch with two people in Amsterdam that we had met last year. While in Spain, in San Sebastian, we did one of those bicycle tours of the city. And here were these people. We got to know them. We had lunch. They were from Amsterdam. We told them we were going to visit Amsterdam. They invited us to lunch. Ham, cheese, and white asparagus. A delicacy in Amsterdam. And we shared thoughts and concerns about what we see happening in the world. It's a shrinking planet, people coming together through travel and in the process gaining new appreciation and understanding. In 1953, I skipped my sixth grade class to watch on a friend's TV the coronation of Queen Elizabeth II. A cable had just been laid across the Atlantic Ocean. making possible for the first time a live broadcast of an event in Europe. And then in July of 62, the first Telstar satellites were launched, and messages could now travel beyond the curvature of the Earth. And this was followed in our lifetime with the creation of the Internet. And now we have the capacity of connecting with people around the globe. I have friends in Australia, in China, England, Ireland, Mexico, Canada, Africa, Europe, Scandinavia. Probably others. It's just what came to mind. Who would have ever thought such a thing would be possible? Can it be that bringing Earth's peoples together in dialogue relationships is the work of divine love? A Pentecost of some kind? And is there potential in such encounters for the making of a new Earth community where all are together now? There's that James Webb telescope up there that was launched in 2021. Over the last three decades, engineers from 14 countries brought their minds together to construct that telescope. 100 times more sentient than the Hubble. It's the eye of humanity out there exploring the universe. And humanity is the mind. We're taking in. We're going back to the beginnings of things through that eye. No one person, no single country could have built this marvel, enabling the universe to become aware of itself. We fought a civil war, we fought an international war to challenge the horrors of anti-Semitism and other evils. We engaged in fights in the 50s and 60s for the civil rights of every person. We continued to work for the voting rights of all. The affirmations of gays and later transgender people, freedom to marry the one you love. Now we face the opportunities and the challenges of AI. Who of us knows where that's taking us, how it may bring us together or divide us? What do I make from all of this? Well, first of all, I find myself believing that God is hidden in the depths of creation. And I know to say this is controversial for some. Last Thursday, at the close of Colbert's last show, did you watch it? I suppose many of you did. Standing before a mysterious, colorful, swirling hole that grabbed Colbert's watch right off of his hand and took it someplace. Neil deGrasse Tyson appears to help Colbert make sense of what he's seeing. "Thank God you're here," Colbert says. "No, thanks science," responds Tyson. Do they need to be divided? Do they need to be at each other? Isn't there a sense in which we need them both to find the greater meaning and purpose and movement in what is happening in the world? For some, there is no extraordinary realm above and beyond what we take in with our five senses. Creation is mechanistic, predictable, runs by strict natural law. Mary Oliver says, "I have refused to live locked in the orderly house of reasons and proofs. The world I live in and believe in is wider than that. And anyway, what's wrong with maybe? You wouldn't believe what once or twice I have seen. I'll just tell you this. Only if there are angels in your head will you ever possibly see one. The flow of human history gives us reason to pause and recognize I was going to say the hand of God, but I don't want to give the impression of controlling it, because I believe it's God in relationship. You sang it. The difference when you think that God is in the mix. We sang it this morning. God is in and with us now, calling us forward, inviting us to join as co-creators with God in the making of a new future. And in this is our hope. There's no guarantee. Some still want to do away with democratic practices and establish autocratic rule. Some want to see the clock turn back on civil rights for all. Some, even the church, want to keep everything as it has always been, believing just exactly as we put things in a box centuries ago, not reading and discerning the signs of our time that are inviting us to change. But the last thing that I think, that I take from all of this, is that love is the primary energy of the universe. Love, in its simplest expression, is at the heart of that attraction that brought atoms together in the beginning. Love is what brings people together today to marvel at creation, to work for the healing of the planet and the well-being of all of its peoples. Ilya Delio writes, "No life is inconsequential. Every life has ultimate value. Every life affects every other life because from the beginning of time, we have belonged to each other. Without a consciousness of interrelatedness, we are entrapped in the illusion of separateness. Religion has done a disservice by making God an object of our attention rather than the ground of our lives. As if God might actually be a person distinct from us. Today, we must rediscover God in order to be at home in the universe with one another and the wider world of nature." So I'm just going to end with what I was going to sing. It'll wait for another time.
Yes.
If you can help somebody as you pass along, if you can cheer somebody with a word or a song, if you can bring back beauty to a world that's fraught and spread love's message that the master taught, then I say, I think Jesus would say, your living is not in vain, and that you know something about what Pentecost is all about. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.wepuTloveFirst.org.